last 100 years, Hartford's gone from being the richest city in the country to the poorest. The city's in crisis, from public education to public safety. The question for Hartford today is, have we reached the bottom? Is Hartford turning around?
Welcome to Hartford 2020, a weekly program on the problems and opportunities facing the city of Hartford. On this program, you'll hear politicians and community activists, scholars and gadflies, and people from across Hartford's many communities sharing with us their candid opinions about how Hartford reached this point and where it's going. I'm Jay Hughes, Associate Director of Institutional Research and Planning at Trinity College.
And I'm Ivan Kuzik, the Director of the city's Data Center at Trinity College. Stay tuned for an hour exploring the future of Hartford. Albert Ilg is a nationally recognized city administrator. He served 32 years as the town manager in Windsor, Connecticut. After a short retirement, he was tapped by Eddie Perez, Hartford's new mayor, to be the interim city manager in the mayor's new reorganization plans. Under the charter at the time, the city manager's position had powers normally associated with that of a corporate CEO. The city manager was responsible only to the city council. According to the New York Times, in the 20 years prior to Mr. Ilg assuming the manager's job, Hartford had 8 city managers, some of whom were credited with negotiating union and pension contracts that experts said would bankrupt a private business. The mayor's desire to appoint Mr. Ilg over the objections of the city council majority led to a breach. The mayor jettisoned his alliance with the council Democrats and joined together a new coalition featuring 2 Democrats, 2 Republicans, and a Green Party member. In almost a year as city manager, Mr. Ilg has earned widespread respect and support across the city. He was recently replaced by Lee Erdman, who will become the chief administrative officer of Hartford in January 2000 following the charter reform. Al, you spent almost 30 years as the town manager in Windsor. Could you talk a bit about how Windsor has changed and how the region has changed?
Well, sure. When I came to Windsor, we had a population of 19,000. And when I left, the population was close to 30,000. And that was over a 30-year period. Windsor continued to grow. Hartford, for example, did not grow. As a matter of fact, it has lost population quite a bit. As a matter of fact, just in the last 10 years, from 1990 to 2000, Hartford lost 13,000 people, going from 137,000 to 124,000. Windsor, on the other hand, slightly increased between 1990 and 2000. I think the state as a whole did not have a robust population increase in that decade. But in previous years, there were dramatic increases. For example, the whole suburbanization took place after World War II, and especially in the 1950s, from 1950 to 1960, there was a dramatic increase in the population in Windsor. That was the time when combustion engineering made the industrialization of the city started. But it coincided with, I think, the movement of people out of the city into the suburbs. And I can't recall exactly, but it was like there were thousands of people that moved into Windsor during that decade. And I remember 55 being the highest number of new building permits ever issued for single-family residents. And people, these were veterans coming back from the war, and they bought small houses that were starter houses, they were called. And I remember they had big contests and everything else. And the builders would hide the house, and then they would have an unveiling, and everybody would ooh and ah, and then they'd buy houses in that. You know, say, well, I want one of those and that kind of thing. And so it was a time of a great movement, and I would say pretty much the 50s, because of the number of people that wanted fresh air. That was the idea. You wanted fresh air, and you wanted a garden and a lawn, and the kids could play outside in the fresh air, and that was a big thing I remember. Same thing happened in New York City, by the way, because I lived in New York City during the war, and people went to New Jersey. New Jersey was the suburbs. And that's why people went. It was to get out of the city with the traffic and the density. That was a big thing in those days, was to get out by yourself a little bit, because we all was living in apartments. And people wanted to be by themselves and have their family.
Let me ask a question for the members of the audience who aren't totally familiar with city government. How does it differ to be a mayor than a city manager? What's the political difference between a town that chooses one form of governance versus the other or has a combination of the two? And you were in office for 33 years. Do you think that you accumulate the kind of daily-esque, powers in a town when you're in office for 33 years?
I'm not sure about accumulating powers. In some ways, you lose power because the personnel function is really the most the most difficult function if you're a chief executive because 30 people will apply for a job and you hire one, and then 29 people are disappointed. And after a while, that accumulates. And the person that you hire says, well, I should have been hired anyway. I was the most competent. So, it's very tough. And I talked to a manager one time. He was in Brookline, and he had been there for 45 years. And I said, how in the world did you do that? And he said, I had nothing to do with personnel. There was a personnel commission, and they took care of it all. So I think he was on to something. But in terms of the council manager plan was and the strong mayor plan came about at the same time in early 1900s. There had the cities of the United States were full of corruption. There was nepotism in appointments and bribery, and I guess they were Lincoln Steffens, I think, wrote at that time and indicated that the cities were really awful. The counties at that time were called the Dark Continent of American politics. So it was not a good time for civic life. And the progressives in the early 1900s, with Wilson and Roosevelt and others leading the campaigns, established bureaus of municipal research at colleges in the United States, and also then proceeded to propose plans for the correction of the conditions of these corrupt cities. And it was the time, you remember, when we had Tammany Hall and we had the Pendergast machine, and then we had there was a group in Chicago, I forget what they were called. And what they did is they came up with two ways of governing cities they felt in the future. Because when they looked at the corrupt cities, they found that the cities had very weak mayors. The cities were run by political bosses outside the government. And appointments certainly weren't in a classified service. They were just your brother-in-law would get appointed if you were in power. And that there were no budgets. The money wasn't kept track of. And so what they said is we needed a business model. And we will offer two business models. And the first one will be we will have a chief executive who is appointed by the city council. We'll make sure the city council is small, usually 7 to 9 members. They will appoint a chief executive, and the town council or the city council will be like a board of directors, and they will hire a president of the corporation. The president of the corporation will hire vice presidents, or call them department heads. He will hire a vice president for police, a vice president for, fire department and for public works, etc. And he will appoint he or she. At that time, it was always he. Which, by the way, it is not now in council manager governments. It's quite different. But the person would then be in charge, and there would be only a small ballot, 7 people running. There might be obviously opponents for all of those positions, but there would only be 7 to 9 positions. And we would have nonpartisan elections because they felt that the political bosses were they grew from the political elections that were held. And and then they felt that that would correct the problems. They'd also have a civil service commission to make sure that there was examinations and that people were appointed on the basis in government, on the basis of ability and fitness. The other second way they said is, let's do this. We will also offer to the people a plan, which is the strong mayor plan. They didn't want a weak mayor because they said the weak mayor was captured by the political bosses. So they wanted a strong manager who was going to bring professionalism, because the manager had to be trained in a government administration or engineering or something like that. On the other hand, they said, let's have people will want an elected chief executive. So we will prepare and propose a strong mayor. And the mayor will appoint department heads. the mayor will not require the consent of the council for appointment of department heads. And the mayor will prepare a budget and submit it to the council, just the same way a manager does in that form of government to the council. And the mayor will appoint the department heads, as I said, and be responsible for the welfare of, you know, of the government. It's it's more of a traditional American system in the sense that if you look at the state government, there is an executive, the governor, there is a legislature, and equivalent to the city council in a strong mayor form, and large cities have judiciaries, not in Connecticut because you have a single system here, but in other states it's not unusual to have city courts. So there's the executive, legislative, judicial. On the federal level, it mirrors what was created at the federal level. People have some difficulty understanding the council manager government because it is a little different. They say, well, who's the executive? And the chief executive officer is the manager, but the manager has no political base and has no political power. And that goes back to answering the question about, do you accrue power over the years? You really don't, because you never have political power, and you're always subject to being hired and fired by the council. That's one of the characteristics of the manager plan, in that the council, when it decides it no longer needs your services, can release you. And they're usually, for many years, no contracts. So you were out of a job if you didn't do a good job, or if they didn't like what you were doing, and then they would hire somebody else. So, but it is a committee form. It says basically it's predicated on the fact that seven people can make better decisions over a long period of time than a single individual. So you have the council making decisions and telling the manager what it wants done versus a mayor, a single person, telling the department heads what to do. But one has to recognize, of course, that in the strong mayor form, the council does have a role, and they can veto. They can propose legislation themselves. So it's more of a partnership sometimes. But there is more politics involved in the mayor council, because it's the same as the, you know, when the governor is of one party, the legislature is of another party. We see it at the national level, and you see it at the municipal level. But we are used to that system. The manager plan tends to be more for nonpartisan councils. And I would also say that the manager plan is more geared towards a homogeneous population for came out of a good government movement, and it's kind of, let's get the roads built right. Let's make sure the bridges don't fall down. Let's make sure the money is spent wisely, you know, efficiently. So efficiency and effectiveness were the hallmarks of the council manager plan. And I think representation is the hallmark of the strong mayor plan.
Well, so Hartford's experience with the manager plan is 50 years old. In the last 20 years, there have been 8 city managers. And your appointment was really, I think, welcomed by a number of sort of constituencies around the city, including the current, as being a sign of a new professionalism coming into the position, and a person in a position who wasn't going to be influenced by sort of the politics of the council. That said, I mean, I think one of the things that you brought up was very important was sort of the homogeneity of the community and having similar goals. And in a city like Hartford, which is changing so much, there's not a lot of homogeneity. There are a lot of different factions. And I wonder whether, in a way, just the way Hartford has developed over the last 30 years with different communities and with different elements of parties on the council, whether that, in a sense, is what helped to doom sort of the manager form of government, really set us up for a strong mayor. Do you have any sense on sort of, you know, how that's evolved? I mean, looking at a town manager back at Hartford and seeing the continuing almost turnover in the position, I wonder, you know, whether you had any thoughts on how Hartford was run.
Sure. I think you're correct in your assumption. And I mean, you have to do further research to validate it completely. But I know that in Hartford, for example, from 1947, and I'm not sure, they appointed a manager by the name of Carlton Sharp, and he was well regarded in the United States, known in the profession as an outstanding manager. And I think he served for 13 years, I'm sorry. And I think he went from 47 to 1960. I, could be off a couple of years plus or minus. But the important thing about Carlton Sharp was he was that was when the manager plan changed, right? They'd had a form of government. I think it was a mayor form, not sure. But they decided that there was too much, too much separation of decision-making, or they couldn't hold somebody. I don't know what it was. But Hartford, like communities all over the United States after World War II, especially suburban communities, it's interesting, went to the council manager plan because they wanted somebody who was trained in municipal government, and they wanted to put they thought administration was important. And later on, as we went along, getting grants became very important. So they wanted to get some expertise in those areas. What happened in Hartford from 47 to 60 was, when it started in 47, I think, was homogeneous and started to change probably into 1960. By the time I got here in 1966, there was a larger minority population. And I think as the city progressed, you saw more and more political action in terms of the government. One of the charter changes I know that came up after Mr. Sharp left was to have the mayor separately elected. In the council manager government, the mayor is seen as the chairman of the council, and therefore, of the seven members, for example, or nine members that are elected, they will choose one of their members as the mayor, and they really choose the person as the chairman of the council. And in Windsor, for example, the charter called the mayor, not a mayor, called that person a chairman of the council. And it wasn't, that change didn't take place until much later, maybe 1980, that name changed, but it was significant. But so, the feeling was that the person who was elected by the council was in a better position to know who their leader would be and who had the leadership capability. That's how it worked. Well, in 1960, they decided to have a separate mayor. And I think the other thing you have to remember is that from 1947 until about 1960, maybe a little shorter than that, the people that controlled the city on the city council, I mean, the city council was the good government party. It wasn't Democrats or Republicans. And, I mean, they may have been, but the people that ran were the good government party. And some people have said that they just couldn't sustain it any longer. And so they weakened, and the two-party system, Republicans and Democrats, who were there in place for state and national elections, continued, and the good government party faded. I'm just not sure about all that history, but it makes sense in this, you know, and because that's what was happening in the United States. And then and you're up to 1960, and then you go through the 60s, and we had the turmoil, the Civil Rights Revolution, the riots in Hartford, as well as across the country, and growing population, minorities in the city. And I think the needs, the desires, and the wishes of different people are, you know, there's an issue of representativeness. And the country has gradually moved more and more to representative. It is the minority population, and that is now accepted. You know that we have to represent minorities in the government in terms of elected, and that's why, for example, the state government has kind of a, you know, they have these informal rules to make sure people are represented. But later on, and now, and you know, in the last few years, what we've seen is representation by gender, representation by practically every group in the United States has sought to be represented and has been accepted, and so you know, all parts of the population are represented.
Well, following up, so Hartford is now moving back towards a strong mayoral form of government. Everyone's optimistic. They think that, you know, finally Hartford could be put sort of on a new business basis with a strong mayor. We have a popular mayor.
It doesn't look at this point, according to the papers, that he's going to have serious opposition in his reelection. At the same time, you know, a few years ago, everybody thought, you know, Ganem in Bridgeport was really sort of, you know, the hottest thing when it comes to municipalities. I mean, in the short term, certainly after 50 years of city manager government, a council managed government, people are hopeful. I mean, are you hopeful for sort of long term that the city can turn around and be put on a business basis with a strong mayor?
You think there are potential risks?
Well, I think the political structure, I think one has to have confidence in the political structure. It is our way of life in this country. And it's why people serve in the government, because I think there are a number of us that feel very strongly about the value of democracy. And so we try to make every contribution we can to it. Democracy means having dissent and having different viewpoints. And in that way, I mean, certainly a mayor provides accountability. I mean, one of the problems in Hartford, obviously, has been three centers of power. The manager was a center of power. The deputy mayor, previously at some previous administrations, was a power center. And then you had the mayor was a power center. And I think it gets confusing. And I think people said that you know, when they voted for the strong mayor form of government, they said we want accountability. And I assumed from that previously they had been shuffled. I mean, you couldn't really get an answer somewhere. And you also will see the other guy, you know, and so it was passed around. So in that sense, there will be accountability. And, as far as Ganem is concerned and, Giordano and Waterbury and that kind of thing and these strong mayors, let me tell you, it's who you have in office, not the structure. And whether it's a council manager government or whether it's a strong mayor government, the people have to be eternally vigilant. And it's in the final analysis, it's the people being interested in their government and realizing how important the government is to their daily life and wanting it to be a very good government. People want a good government, they'll get it, no matter what the form of government is. But if they go to sleep, things happen. And, it can happen under any form of government. I'm hopeful that Hartford, it has, you know, a record of fiscal conservatism. It has a record of adapting to its environment. Hartford's done very well in that respect. And the strong mayor form of government may be a real example of that. Maybe the council manager government had played itself out because it was no longer able to react well and quickly to what the needs of a differing population was. I know I came from an immigrant family, so I'm a little sensitive. I remember, you know, how difficult it was to get some things, and there weren't, and so I put myself in the place of people who are trying to get things from their government, or at least be treated with respect, and try to, make a contribution. And, you can only be shut out so long, and eventually you say, wait a minute, I want something where my voice is heard. And I think that's what's happening. It's Hartford. It's not just Hartford, I think. So it's a very good sign that people are actively involved in their government. And as long as they do that, they'll be okay.
Well, in addition to a vigilant public, what else do you need in terms of a successful government, be it manager type or strong mayor?
The other thing you need is professionalism within the government in terms of carrying out the policies of the government. You can split government into two major pieces. And the first is, what do we do? And the second piece is, how do we do it? And our elected leaders decide what we do. They make the policies and they just set the direction for the organization, for the whole city, at least the city government, right? But the how is not particularly their expertise. That should be left to people who have been trained and have experience in the particular professions that are needed to carry out the government. For example, we would expect that a police chief would have experience and training in police work, and we would have a public works director who may be an engineer, for example, or have a degree in administration or be proficient in administration. And the same with the fire chief and the same with other department heads. Department heads are very important. It's very important that they be professionally trained. By that, I mean professionally trained and have vast experience. The more experience, the better, frankly. Also, that applies to a chief administrative officer. Now, the government in Hartford, when it goes to the strong mayor on January 1st, will have a chief administrative officer. It's called a chief operating officer. But that person is trained and experienced in operating a government. And that will be a tremendous asset for the government, and I predict it will be a great help to the mayor and to the council as they struggle with the issues of what to do. And the manager or the chief executive office, no, not the chief executive, but the chief administrative officer, in this case now, deals with the issues of how to do it. And with the department heads and with the guidance of the employees who Hartford is blessed. It has a number of excellent employees. I just wish the systems in place took advantage of their caring for the city and their abilities, but hopefully that can be changed with the professionals and with the strong mayor having a strong desire to do it.
But you said it didn't make that much difference. If people aren't engaged, then any form of government can go awry. And I think the flip side of that is that there are kind of forces at work in our society and in our economy that may make any form of governance and any degree of political and citizen involvement irrelevant. That, for instance, the deindustrialization of the big cities has caused a kind of a structural fiscal crisis in a lot of these cities. How do we get around that? I mean, how do cities like Hartford? I mean, Hartford wasn't that major an industrial capital, but to some extent, all cities, big cities, have faced this over the last 20 years. This deindustrialization and this scrabbling for some kind of new post-industrial model.
Well, as one columnist said and keeps saying, we have factory cities with no factories. I think that's part of the issue. Certainly the economic cities were formed because of for economic reasons, where people were close by. There was no public transportation to speak of, so people were close by places of work. Then as trolleys were developed and other means of transport, finally the car, people could live further away from where they worked. And unfortunately, what's happened because of, I think, high costs in the city and low costs in the outlying areas, it's flipped. And the factories, in a number of cases, have moved out to the suburbs. And that has reduced the ability of the city to keep paying for all of the services that it wanted to provide to its population. So the deindustrialization of the city is, I mean, that is true, except you got to remember in Hartford, there are thousands of people that come in every day to work in the buildings that we have in Hartford, and we're very thankful for that. But you're right. I mean, the manufacturing and small business have moved out.
So it's not as much of a factor for Hartford, this kind of larger change in our economy. Because of our economy was more white collar, more service oriented than industrial in the city of Hartford itself.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I think
you know, the interesting thing about Hartford's economy was that it wasn't like a one horse town. You had a significant manufacturing base in the 50s, and you had a significant white collar workforce, and so what that did for Hartford was it protected it from sort of the boom-bust cycle that affects, you know, the American economy from time to time. During the Depression, Hartford really didn't slip. I mean, Hartford's industrial working class was hit really hard, but the financial sector, the insurance sector, wasn't. And so, by and large, they were able to ride out a lot of the storms because they had this dual-natured workforce, this dual economy. I think what happens with the end of manufacturing, and it really starts in the 50s when factories start moving out to the suburbs, and in the 60s and 70s, it increases in pace because factories start moving down south, and eventually they're moving offshore. What happens is now Hartford becomes solely dependent, in terms of its economic well-being, on the financial and industrial and insurance industry. Industry's gone, and it's banks and insurance. And I think when those sectors were buffeted in the late 80s and early 90s, it really showed just how far Hartford could fall. It had never experienced a recession that deep or that prolonged, and it's really because we don't have a diversified economy anymore. And that's something everyone struggles with. But Hartford was able to, I think, put it off because we had this large white-collar work base for so long. And to a degree, it takes us back to when you were talking about, you know, Hartford between 47 and 1960. I mean, people look back at that time as a time when sort of, a dozen well-connected insurance executives really ran the city. And they had one focus, a civic-mindedness about what it took to run the city. And the neighborhoods weren't involved. Various communities weren't involved.
You're listening to Hartford 2020 on WRTC Hartford, the radio station of Trinity College.
Today, we're speaking with Al Ilg, the former interim city manager of Hartford.
A lot of people look back on it nostalgically because they don't know who's running the city nowadays. You know, they think if only we had bishops again, then we would be able to, the bishops being the name of those insurance executives, then we'd be able to get X, Y, and Z done in the city.
Well, that the problem is I think they may have been here longer. What we have now, I suspect, are corporate chief executives who, move around the country. I don't know if that's absolutely true because I don't know them, but I think.
But that's part of it, isn't it? I mean, you've been here for a while, and you don't know them. I mean, they're not involved in the civic life of the city.
Well, that's true, isn't it? But you know, there was, Hartford in 1940s and the 1950s must have been the most beautiful city in the country, and probably many years before that. But it is a magnificent city in terms of its buildings, its historic buildings, and especially its parklands. The layout of the city was all well planned. It was just a marvelous place. And I think people wanted to move out, but I said the fresh air, and they wanted to have an environment where they could have gardens, etc., and a house of your own, move out of apartments. And then the suburbs also offered much cheaper land. I mean, when I worked in Windsor, we could offer land to prospects for industry at very, very low rates. And so people moved. We also had very low taxes because we didn't have a service burden the way Hartford does. And so it really became an unfair competition. And I went into Hartford when I was city manager of Windsor, knocking on doors of the industries and saying, come on out. And I stopped. I actually stopped because in 67, 68, it was so easy that I said, this is immoral. I just couldn't do it anymore. Because what we were doing was cleaning the city out. It was that easy. I don't know. There wasn't that much activity in the other towns. Hartford was very lucky. I think I was one of the few sharks out there. And I pulled back because I had come up from Tennessee. I was hired into Windsor because of my experience in Tennessee and economic development. And the mayor and the council in 1966, they wanted economic development. And the reason they wanted it was for taxes. And I would argue that it was for jobs. And they said, no, we want taxes. So, but in the South, we developed for jobs. We give people the land. We gave people the factories. We built the factories for them and gave them to them. And when I came here, there was a much different attitude. Connecticut was very rich, great environment for industry. And so there wasn't the desire. And I would talk to people and tell them, you really better look out the window. Those cars going by with those Tennessee license plates are not here because they're tourists. And because I had made some trips to the north. But they didn't. They said, oh, no, we're fine. And then the factory started moving down south, of course. Finally took hold in the 60s. And they moved in the south. And they moved out of here. And so we're left with less. The suburbs, by the way, are also left with less. I mean, there's less everywhere in the suburbs and the city. And there was a time before you said the 1990s and 80s when it was a zero-sum game. Everything the city lost, we gained. But when the defense budget closed down and the financial crisis occurred in the United States, Hartford got hit twice and went to its knees. But the whole region went down. Windsor now, I mean, we're scrapping after some bones, you know, in the can. But there's not a whole lot of meat on the bones anymore.
Well, we read at the beginning John O'Connell's idea about dividing Hartford up and giving it to all the neighboring suburbs. I mean, if the pie in general has gone down, still the suburbs have a little bit more of the goods of society than Hartford does. I mean, is this concept of Hartford a viable concern? I mean, do you think that there's a future for a city like Hartford, or should it, or are the only solutions to be found at some kind of regionalization or carving up or something like that?
Well, I used to agree with that. I used to tell people what we ought to do is just all the surrounding cities around Hartford, divided up. Each of us would run a piece, our piece, whatever it was, and that would straighten out everything. I no longer think so. It was a crazy idea. Hartford is the center of culture. It is the center of art. It is a very important job center. You just have to see all the people that come into the city, and you have to see the city streets after 5 o'clock when people leave to know that Hartford is a real job mecca. It is also the center for thought, I think, in terms of the interchange, the excitement of moving back and forth in ideas and cafes and restaurants and thoughts. Trinity, for example, and the University of Hartford, and now our community college downtown. So it is a education center as well. And I don't think the region could not do without Hartford. It's the historical center. It's also the capital city, of course.
I wasn't recommending nuking it. I was just...
No. I know. Well, I get defensive, I guess. Thing to happen to it.
You know, in the last 10 years, you mentioned Hartford's population declined by 13%, but the county didn't grow at all. Statist-